This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
The one and only Mike Vaccaro, the great sports columnist of the New York Post. Mike, how are you?
Joe, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm pumped up, Mike. I'm pumped. I want blood. I smell blood. I want blood. I want to win today. There's no gray area. Let's be real. The pressure has shifted. The dynamic of this series has completely changed. The Knicks have to win the series now. There's no gray area. There's no, oh, we gave them a series. No. You want two games in Boston? Let's stick it right up their rear end. I've said this over and over, Mike. This is not the Bill Russell Celtics. This is not the Larry Bird Celtics. This is not the Dave Cowan Celtics. This is not the Kevin Garnett Celtics. Let's go stick it up their rear end today. God, today, to me, is a must-win game. I really mean it, Mike. This game, to me, they can lose and come back and win game four. No. Must win. Let's stick it to them today, Mike.
Yeah, there should be a sense of urgency, and I think there will be. You don't want to give the Celtics
any hope.
Spot that they're back in it. You know, I mean, if we can, and I get it. You know, one of these days the team's going to do what the Red Sox did years ago and come back in 3-0. But it's a lot different dynamic to do that in basketball, I think. And I think that if you win today, you really do put an imprint on the series, and it's going to be almost impossible for the Celtics to come back. And look, I mean, it's interesting because you expect the Garden to be at full volume, at full,
no doubt.
Whatever. I figure it's going to be the craziest atmosphere since the LJ 4-point play game, which is only 26 years ago. And
I was at that game. I was young then, too.
I was also. I still get tinnitus in my ear because of it. I mean, it was so loud.
Right.
But you're right. I mean, this is an opportunity for the Knicks. Look. Forget about why they're here at 2-0. Forget about what had to go right for them in games 1 and 2. The fact of the matter is they're here. They're two games up on the Celtics, and it's really all the series is it's on their racket, so to speak. You know, I mean, you just want to take care of business today, and you know, because right now there's still so much, you know, outside of New York, there's still so much thought that Celtics can recover. And look, I did. If I didn't help anybody seeing that the Cavaliers were able to go into Indiana and win last night like that. So I mean, there's still the sense that the Knicks haven't really done anything, and they really haven't.
They haven't.
You know,
no.
I mean, they're halfway home.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you'll maybe be able to live with in August, months from now, if that happens. But you know what? I mean, in the moment, you have an opportunity. You why not seize it? There are so few chances for this particular franchise to find a path to get to the NBA Finals, and that's starting to develop. But you got to win today for that to be real.
You know, this series can go one of two ways. This can turn out to be one of the greatest series wins in the history of the franchise, which I would, if they do win this, I would put that right up there. Probably top five all-time playoff series. I would put it right up there. And it has a chance to be one of the worst losses in the history of the franchise, right up there with 93 when they lost to the Bulls after they were up 2-0. Now, this is not the Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls they're playing. The Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls would wipe the floor with this Celtic team. Wipe the floor with them. One thing that concerned. Go ahead, Mike.
No, I was going to say one thing I can pretty say with pretty much assurance is that the Michael Jordan Bulls, you know, wouldn't have lost two games at home when they had 20 points in the third quarter. So
Right, that's right. We would have got killed in both of those games, 100%. Right now, I'm worried about the officials. Because the officials, there was a lot of bad. How many times, and we saw this in the Pistons series too, Mike. How many times have I seen guys go to the basket, call Anthony Towns, Anunoby, get absolutely hammered, and no call? How about the call? How about this? This to me defines it. The play where Anunoby has that monster dunk over Derek White in game two, and they call an offensive foul on him. It took him about 5 seconds to make the call, and they call offensive foul on Anunoby. Are you kidding me, Mike? Come on.
Yeah, to me, there's really nothing you can do about officials' calls. I think the thing that the Knicks can control is how they respond to them. And look, I mean, we've seen all year where Brunson and Towns and a few other guys. You know, sometimes, you know, they ruin the next defensive possession because they're too busy arguing about it. I know it's the heat of the moment. It's hard not to.
Right.
But I really think one of the things that they have to do is, I mean, you almost have to anticipate you're not going to get a great whistle and understand you just got to be kind of zen about it and just get back and play. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, the one guy, you know, and I've watched him all year, and I've, you know, it's remarkable how bad a whistle Karl Anthony Towns gets for what
unbelievable
a good player he is.
Yep.
You know, I mean, and I get it. Not every one of the times he goes to the basket and complains is fouls, but a lot of them they are. And the fact of the matter is, what makes it worse for Towns is that he gets whistled for so many touch fouls, and so you get that in addition to the fact that, you know, a lot of times he's winding on the ground and there's no whistle, and you know, I can't really explain that. I don't know why that is. Some players just are able to draw fouls, and some people aren't. But that's something that really, after a year of watching Towns play, I mean,
right. You
can understand his frustration particularly. But he's a guy who's got to get back into the fray because you just can't. The Celtics are hard enough to beat 5-on-5. You're not going to have any shot against him if you're playing a couple of possessions 4-on-5.
No doubt about it. And one of the great misnomers in any sport, we'll just concentrate on the NBA, is this idea that the league wants the Knicks to be good. Okay, then the league doesn't care. They went 20 years with them in the abyss. Okay, outside of the Ewing lottery, they didn't even move up a slot. Okay, in these lotteries that they've been in. So who's kidding who? They could care less about the Knicks being good. They want the Lakers to be good all the time, of course, and they want the Celtics to be good. Let's be real, right? Am I wrong saying this, Mike? Come on.
Well, there's not a lot of evidence to argue with you on that. I mean, you know, it's
interesting. Right.
What's funny, though, is that, you know, whenever somebody else gets a bad whistle at the Garden, all of a sudden it's like, oh, the NBA is in the Knicks' pocket. You know,
never.
Carlisle danced that dance last year and maybe did it successfully because the whistle certainly changed after game two last year. And, you know, even in the first round, Bickerstaff tried to, you know, he never came out and said, well, then, you know, the NBA is in the tank for the Knicks, but. You know, he all but said that, you know, in terms of talking about the kind of whistle they were getting in the first couple of games. So, it's hard to argue. I mean, if the NBA was so in the tank for the Knicks, there'd probably be maybe more than, you know, two NBA Finals appearances since 1973.
Yes. Yeah, no question about that. And we might have actually won a championship, I mean, you know, before most of the world was born. You know what I mean? We'd have won another one,
right. You
know? So,
right.
I mean, by the way, how about what was Mazzulla doing? He's fouling. It worked in game one to some degree, the Hakim-Mitch thing, right? He's fouling him in game two when they weren't over the limit yet. I mean, what was he doing? Did Mazzulla not realize what the rule is? That you got to be over the limit for him to go out to shoot fouls, you know?
No, his spin after that game is that he wanted to get Mitch off the floor, which is hilarious because what happens when you get Mitch off the floor is that you bring in Anunoby, who, he had a tough offensive game in game one, but in game two, rather, great game in game one. He's their best defensive player, so I don't understand that. And not only that, but you know what? If you don't waste those fouls, you know, you're able to take still a foul to give in the last 12 seconds when, you know, instead of Jalen being able to kind of drive to the basket with impunity and draw a foul that way, maybe you play the game where you have a foul to give and you kind of make the Knicks reset. All kinds of weird stuff. I mean, I hate that rule anyway. I just think it's an abomination. And it's not just Mitch. I mean, I felt this way when they did it with Shaq and all the other guys they do it.
Yep. Well, that's what started Shaq.
It's just an unpleasant way to watch basketball. But it's in the rules, so you got to deal with it. But, specific to this, I just don't think it's a – look. And now I think it's pretty clear that when he starts playing that, you know, Tibbs is going to counter. You know, in game one he countered because, you know, they started doing it on Mitch and Towns had foul trouble. You know, so he brought in Precious for a couple minutes. And that's one way to solve that. And
right.
The other way to solve right. it is just to take Mitch out of the game until 2 minutes are left. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was an odd bit of strategy, I agree. And I just didn't think – I thought it backfired on a lot of levels.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. We're talking to the great Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post. Of course, the Knicks game 3 today at the Garden, up 2-0 after the two just scintillating wins. No other way to say it, in Boston. You know, it's really amazing, you know, just how tough. Watching this team all year, Mike, you know, they couldn't beat any good teams, the whole thing, you know, and they were pretty much locked into the third seed for the last 4 months of the season. I mean, we all knew what was going to happen. They were going to beat a 3 seed. They were going to play Boston in the second round and all that. But they are so – I didn't realize, and maybe it's – and I attribute this to the Villanova guys who won championships at Villanova and all that, how tough-minded this team is. I mean, this is a mentally tough basketball team, and we really – I really didn't see that all year during the regular season. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that's for sure. I think when you have that level of mental toughness, I'm not sure that it's apparent during the long, endless NBA season. No matter how mentally tough you are, it's just going to be hard to survive 3 games in 4 nights and some of the gauntlets you got to go through. But look, here's the thing also, Joe, to remember, and you know, I was writing this, and you and I believe we talked about this a couple of times. You know, when you get right down to it, you know, the Knicks had their whole team intact for about 3 games this year.
Right.
You know,
one
of those games was the overtime loss to the Celtics. One of those games was the overtime loss to the Lakers, the day that Jalen got hurt. I mean, this is really the first time all year they've had their entire – and look, people would say, oh, Mitch is limited. And Mitch is limited. Mitch was also plus 19 in 22 minutes
right.
the other night.
Right.
He's a legitimate force. I don't want to throw the ball in the low post. I mean, I get kind of frustrated when sometimes it seems like the Knicks forget that it's him and that cat out there, and they try and get him the ball. That doesn't work well. But everything else he does, look, this is the Mitch we saw 2 years ago against Cleveland. It's the Mitch that we saw, you know, until he was pulled down against Philly in the series last year. This is what he is, and this is what I look. It's a different dynamic team, and I think when you have him as an option, it just makes them look that much tougher. The bench worries aren't quite so significant because he's coming off the bench to do all this, and you know I think he just gives them confidence on defense, and his presence there allows OG, who's already a top right defensive player, to take a few more chances and to do things that he might not be able to do without Mitch in there. So, I mean, I've always thought that I wanted to see what this team was going to be like when they had the whole team available. And look, there were times in the Detroit series, you know, I thought I was going to be in my worries because it didn't seem to make much of a difference. But what we're seeing now is just what a difference it is to have that entire team available to you, which they just didn't have for, you know, most of the season, almost all of the season.
And Thibodeau's been criticized constantly, you know, his job was supposed to be on the line, all it is. Criticized about the minutes, you know, he's playing these guys too long and on and on and on. And here we are now, right? And the Knicks are one of the healthiest teams in the playoffs now, as I knock on wood. I mean, you got Steph Curry out. I mean, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable, right? I mean, think about it. They're one of the healthiest teams in the NBA right now.
And look, I genuinely like Kenny Atkinson. I think he did a great job this year.
Sure.
I still think the Nets did an epic mistake when they fired him.
Please, the Nets.
But what he did this year, and it was a concerted strategy, and it worked for them, was – I mean, you won't see any of their starters with minutes above 34, 35 minutes a game. That was a concerted effort on their part to be able to kind of, you know, not have the same kind of questions that those players have. And look what happened in games 1 and 2. They start going down, boom, boom, boom. And it's difficult, you know, to try and win playoff series when you got 3 of your top players on the bench in street clothes.
Yeah.
You know, they were cut last night, but I mean, that's the irony. And here, you know, you have the Knicks. And, you know, my colleague Steph Bondi wrote this the other day, and I think he was smart. You know, it's like say what you will about all those minutes the Knicks play, but now in the playoffs, when you're asking them to go from like 38 minutes a game to 41 minutes a game, it's not nearly as big of a deal as when you have these guys who are used to playing 34 minutes a game. You ask them to play 40, 41 minutes a game. It really, you know, and of course, you're not going to hear a lot of people fall on their sword for Tibbs now because for whatever reason, he's a lightning rod. But I do think that his ways have been kind of, you know, justified in the way these playoffs have gone. I really believe that.
Well, look, Thibodeau to me, and again, we're talking to the great Mike Ficarra of the Post. Thibodeau to me, he's the best coach. I mean, you could say he's ahead of Van Gundy at this point. I mean, his team was in the abyss for 20 years. I mean, you know, come on. They were the worst franchise in sports. The Jets have taken over that mantle now. Only my teams. But they were the worst franchise in sports for 20 years. And now Leon Rose shows up. Thibodeau shows up. Now they're in the playoffs 4 of the last 5 years. 3 years in a row at least winning a playoff series. And you're even thinking about getting rid of this guy? I mean, well, are you kidding me? You know what I mean, Mike? I mean, you got to be kidding me. Please.
I mean, I think I'm pretty sure you're going to agree with me on this, Joe, but to me, one of the most overused, even abused terms in sports is culture.
But right. Oh,
God. What the Knicks have done under Leon Rose and Tom Thibodeau is completely changed the culture. In this case, it actually applies because it was a losing atmosphere. It was a losing environment.
Yep.
Nobody wanted to come here. Nobody wanted to play here because this is where your career came to die. And, you know, you start with Leon, who, you know, he's the one who actually hired Tibbs and had the idea to hire him. And the kind of players he's brought in, knowing they would fit under Tibbs' system. I mean, that is what a culture change is. That's what you said. That's what happens when you rebuild everything from the ground up. And, you know, this is the result. I mean, just because you improve by 10 games a year doesn't mean that you've changed your culture. But in this particular case, it absolutely applies.
Yeah, and here's the other thing, too. Let's be honest about this. Nobody knew that Jalen Brunson was going to turn out to be an all-world superstar in this league. Nobody knew it. When they signed him as a free agent, I know I said, hey, okay, he's a nice player. You know, we'll see what he does here. And this guy's on his way to being one of the all-time Knicks. This guy, I said it to you the other day, he's halfway to the ceiling now, Jalen Brunson.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Brunson. Let's be honest. Nobody saw this coming when they signed him.
No, when he was signed, it was, you know, what the Knicks needed to do after all those years in the wilderness was just start acquiring good basketball players.
Right.
And lots
right.
of them. And, you know, when they acquired him, you're like, well, that's a positive. That's a definite net positive. He's,
right.
His presence is better than whatever was there before. And so you start building with players like that. But yeah, I mean, I certainly didn't see him as a
nobody.
You know, as a guy that people would be chanting MVP on the road. I mean, this is a little different. I mean, maybe we should have because you know what, that one great run that he had with the Mavericks in Dallas, especially when Luka was out that one series.
Right, right.
You know, he was awfully damn good in those playoffs. So maybe we should have realized that there was a clutch playoff gene involved too. You know, it's hard to know and it's hard to translate, and certainly you have all these other things when you come to New York and all the other things you deal with in New York. But, you know, that's the other thing you just couldn't see. I mean, his clutch numbers are so – I get it. The clutch award is kind of something you can laugh at and say, well, I'm not sure who won that one in 1957, do you? But,
right.
I mean,
no.
The fact of the matter is that his clutch numbers are extraordinary.
I think it was – I think Bob Pettit won it in 1957 because the Hawks won the NBA title that year. They actually beat the Celtics, and then the Celtics beat them the next year. So maybe it was Bob Pettit. I'll say him.
Let's say retroactively we get Green Bay Packers. But that's the thing with Jalen's game is that, you know, he's not only great, but he's great when the Knicks need him the most. And I mean, you can count on one hand the kind of players that have gone through New York in any sport.
Right.
You know, that you talk about, you know, your Jeters, your Hernandezes, you know, Eli in two big spots, obviously came up as huge as he can come up. You know, it's an amazing thing to watch a player elevate his game even higher than it is when it matters most. And you don't see it often. And when you do see it, you tend to remember it forever.
Now, let me ask you a question. Did they win the series now? How do you feel now about this now? How do you feel? The dynamic has completely changed. What do you think?
Look, I mean, I picked Celtics in five, so I can't.
Right.
All of a sudden turn
around. Well, everybody did. You weren't alone. I mean, everybody picked the Celtics in five.
But I guess my point there is I still have the same concerns. I still think the Celtics are a better team than the Knicks. Yes, they're not the Bird McHale Celtics, and they're not the, you know, Cowens and JoJo White Celtics, but they're still better than the Knicks. They have more players who can do damage in this game. That doesn't mean they're going to necessarily win, but I still look at that and I say to myself, you know what? It's why I agree with you. Today is so clutch because if they win today, you could easily see them win four straight. You know, if they lose today, I don't think they could do that. And I think that's why today is so important because 2-1 is so much different than 3-0, and the message it sends. It follows up these two, you know, outlier games. You know, and we talked about this yesterday, you and I, Joe. You know, everybody's talking about how the Celtics haven't played their best game yet. Guess what? Neither have the Knicks.
Nope.
And you know what?
We sat here
last Saturday and we said that about them. You know, when it came to playing against the Pistons, they said, I mean, really in the playoffs for a team that's got a 6-2 record now in the playoffs, we still haven't seen them play a 48-minute game.
Nope.
So you got to think there's one of those in there too, and you would really like to see that happen today because
question
they really
about
use
it.
That. That place is gonna, if the Knicks come out and they're in the game for the entire game, and then maybe they pull away late, like one of those classic Garden games, as opposed to one of the crazy games we just saw. It's going to be people are going to walk out of there needing earplugs because it's going to be that loud and raucous and crazy.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, before I let you go, I want to switch gears to the baseball team. I got to tell you this, and you know, and look, David Stearns, I was down on him. He didn't want Alonso. I don't want to hear anybody tell me he wanted him at a certain price. No. He didn't want Alonso. The fans basically got Alonso signed, and now Uncle Stevie has got there's a big check with Pete's name on it, with his picture on it, that Uncle Stevie's going to have to put all those big zeros up for Pete, because he better play his whole career as a Met. With that said, I got to give it up for Stearns with the pitching. Nobody thought Clay. I didn't think Clay Holmes was going to turn out to be a top starter in this league. All these relief pitches, guys like Barzaban, guys like, you know, Max Kranich, these kind of guys, Reed Garrett. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, even David Peterson and Tyler McGill. There's not a Met fan alive, certainly not me, that ever thought either one of these guys was going to be any kind of a major league pitcher. And look what these guys are becoming now. I got to – even this guy, Carroll Channing. What's his name? Griffin Canning? I call him Carroll Channing. Most people don't even know what that is. Most people alive don't even know who Carroll Channing is. But be that as it may, Griffin Canning, right? This guy was terrible in Anaheim. Look what he's doing now. I got to give it up for Stearns. I mean, this pitching lab with him and Jeremy Hefner, there must be something to it, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not only just that it's the second year in a row that it's happened. You know, what's impressive, I think most impressive, is not just how good they've been, but, you know, think about, you know, the last 10, 12, 15 years, you know, the lack of depth that the Mets had. So when DeGrom would invariably go down for 2 months
or somebody else
would go down, I mean, they'd be in real trouble because they had nobody to replace them. What's incredible is that they've had terrible health this year, both in the rotation and in the bullpen. I mean, you got guys who haven't pitched yet. You got guys who are out for the season, and yet they keep finding ways to replace them. I don't know how sustainable that is over the course of 162, but so far, everybody they plug in is able to kind of replicate the guy that they replaced. And to me, that's the most impressive part. You know, when you have, you know, depth and an ability to withstand, you know, Minter going down and not pitching
right
yet, and all this other stuff, that's what's really impressive. And you know, look, it does beg the question. I get it. They didn't go after a high price starter, and people were a little bit questioning that. But you do wonder in this day and age, when you almost bake into a player's career the 2 years they're going to miss for Tommy John surgery, if it's better, if it's not better spent to get a lot of, you know, B plus to A minus players and not worry about bagging the A plus pitcher, because it's just the way things are now. I mean, you know, it's really weird when people talk about Paul Skenes now in Pittsburgh, you know, because people are just waiting for, like, well, you know, clearly at some point he's going to go out for a year. Because
right,
that's just the way
right.
you look at young pitchers now. And I think that does kind of change the dynamic of how you assemble a pitching staff. And, you know, I mean, so far, you know, in the year and a month and a half that we've seen what Stearns has done, that seems to be a specialty of his. And it's been a huge element in why the Mets are where they are right now.
No question about it. And if Frankie Montas ever shows up and starts pitching for the Mets, and if he can turn him into a quality pitcher, then anything's possible. You know what I mean? Like anything.
It really is. It's amazing. It's been amazing to watch. You know, you start last year with Severino and Minaya and all those
right,
guys.
Right.
And it's like, well, and it was almost like you thought that he was playing with fire, doing the same for the system. But if you've got a system that works, maybe that actually is the best thing to go back to over time and again, because it's, you know, got proven results so far.
Yeah, and Soto's starting to hit now. Soto, he hit a bomb. Oh, what a shot he hit last night. That's one of the longest home runs I've seen. That was almost on the bridge in right center field.
What's funny, he hit one against the Mets about 4 or 5 years ago that's still coming down. And that's the only one that I remember that's even longer by anybody
right.
there.
He hit a long one, too, the other night in Arizona, too. That one that was straight away dead center field that he hit, though.
Yeah. I mean, he's a great player. He's a great hitter.
Yeah,
he's a great hitter.
He's not a great defensive player, but he is a great hitter.
But he's a great hitter, and you brought him in here to you didn't bring him in here to be Roberto Clemente in right field. You brought him in here to be a great hitter. And look, I mean, it's just another reminder. We keep getting these reminders, right? With Lindor last year and Judge last year. It's a very long season.
Yep.
And you and I have been watching a lot of baseball in our lifetimes, Joe, and even we get sucked in. I'm sure, you know, it's like you forget it's a 6 month season. It's not a 6 week season. Mm-hmm. It's not a 6 day season.
Yep.
Guys go through slumps, and you know, even the best players can look awfully bad in certain stretches. But yeah, it's a long season, and generally speaking, they do find their, as they say, the back of their baseball card.
And by the way, I want to say one thing about Lindor, because when that trade went down, I wasn't crazy about it. You gave him the money, the contract they gave him, and all that. What are you doing? Well, I was wrong. You know, he had a rough time his first year, but Francisco Lindor has now become an all-time Met, and he's on his way to be number 12. Is on its way to the rafters with the Mets.
You know why I think that was so important, Joe? Not just what he's produced, but and this isn't just for the Mets. It's for other New York teams who have to deal with this specifically because of what New York is as a market.
Right.
Lindor proved that just because you go south, you can actually U-turn and go the other way.
Yes.
You know, and it wasn't that he had a bad season his first year here, but he had the thumbs down thing, and it was really ugly.
By the way, can I say this? I don't want it to jump on you, but I didn't look at it as a big deal at the time, and you know the Mets have made some brutal trades over the years. But this Javi Baez for Crow Armstrong, Pete Crow Armstrong, boy, how bad is that trade? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Right?
That's going to come back. That's going to hurt for a while. But, I really do believe that with Lindor, though, is that, you know, he proved you can actually turn it around.
Right, right.
Not everybody has to be Jason Bay who comes in here and just goes stinks like a stone.
Right.
You know, and, look, I mean, it's funny. I remember when that happened, I remember writing that Julius Randle could learn from that, because Randle had a thumbs down incident too, and bounced back with
year
the next year. So it's actually possible, and I think that's a really valuable thing for all New York teams to be able to see that it's not just, you know, you can't really just, you know, make a judgment after a, you know, one tenth of a contract. Sometimes guys really do come along, and it really does seem that he enjoys himself immensely now playing for this team. It's playing for the city, playing for the team. I mean, you know, we talked earlier about culture. I think that's also, you know, a situation where culture applies. You know, Lindor has really altered and affected for the better the culture of that clubhouse, and it shows.
Yep. Yeah, good time to be a Met fan. Good time to be a Knick fan. Let's hope it all continues. Let's get that win today. Mike, it's great talking to you. Enjoy the game today. Give us that karma today, all right, Mike? All right? You know, a little karma
there. I'll do what I can for you. I'll do what I can for you, Joe. You got one coming. You got at least one coming. Believe me.
I got more than, let me tell you, Mike, I got more than one coming. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you do.
But
you
I'll
do.
Tell you, but you know what, Mike? I'll settle for one. Just give me one more. Let me be at one more parade. I've never been to a parade of the teams that I want. I had to go to I had to work. I had to go to a Yankee parade. Oh, my God. I had to go to two giant parades. Oh, what a disgrace.
Oh, no.
Can I? Because I was working. I had to go to them. You know, when I was a full-time guy, all I want is to go to a parade that's my team before I
there
die. Can I get one of those?
Right, I don't think it's a lot to ask, Joe. I don't think it's a lot to ask. I don't.
I know. Mike, God bless, bro. All the love. We'll talk, all right?
Yeah, Joe. Take care.